And the next thing that we have to look at is our fear. Fear of losing what we have. Fear of not getting what we want. Fear of other people's opinions. Fear of not getting the financial support that I need. Fear of not getting the emotional support that I need. You know, all of this fear. And this fear leads to resentments. And resentments leads to fear. I mean, it's a vicious cycle. So I hope that summarizes a little more about what the four-step inventory is about. Because it's a fact-facing and a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. Okay, it's the truth about us. It's the facts and the truth. And we need to look at our part in the resentment, because that is the only way to the freedom. That is the only way to freedom. When we keep living thinking that others were wrong, we're going to be in bondage. We're going to continue to be that victim. And if we live in that victim stance long enough, we will go back to the food. We will. Is there any questions about this? Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to walk upon this earth as a free human being. Okay? Okay, I'm going to move on because we don't have a lot of time today. Let me see where else I want to go with this. Then we have to have our fear inventory. It says, notice the word fear. It is bracketed alongside the difficulties, you know, with Mr. Brown, the way they describe it. And they're telling us that fear was an evil and a corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with fear. They use the word "if," but when they use the word "it" or whatever, I use what they're talking about here. In other words, it was an evil and corroding thread. I read it, fear was an evil and a corroding thread. The fabric of my existence was shot through with fear. Okay? It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt that we didn't deserve. But did not we keep the ball rolling? See, that's where our part is. We keep that ball rolling. And that's why they're telling us that fear ought to be classed with stealing, because it causes more trouble. So we review our fear thoroughly. We put them in on paper, even though we had no resentment against them. We ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. And some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And I take my fears through the same way that I take my resentments to. I take it, where am I selfish in this fear? Where am I self-seeking in this fear? Where am I dishonest with this fear? Take it through the steps the same way as I do my resentment. And then this is powerful paragraph. If you ever riddled with fear, go to this page 67. When people, you know, when I sponsor people and they're full of fear, I say read 68. I said 67. I'm wrong for the tape. 68. Okay. It says that perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. And that's where we have to get with all of this resentment and all of this fear. We have to start learning to trust and rely upon God. And if we have difficulty with our concept of God, then that's what we need to deal with. And if we resent God, the idea of God, the God of our youth or whatever, then we need to inventory that also. Okay? We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. A calamity is something that causes great fear or pain. Something that's causing us great pain or fear. It says that we never apologize for anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. These are the spiritual principles here. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. This is the fear prayer. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be, not do, be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. And this is a promise. We have to grow into faith. We have to grow into the faith. That's the spiritual principle. And now it says, now about sex. We need to take our romantic and sexual inventory. You know, it's not all the no good things that we may have done, but it's how do we feel about all of this romance and sex that's been in our lives, or non-sex. But it goes to the same thing on 69. There's a few areas that we have to review our conduct, and it has to know where had we been selfish. In other words, what did we want out of that relationship? The dishonest, you know, what kind of direct lie did we tell? What lie of omission did we do? You know, where have we been dishonest? What was the lies that we told ourselves about it? Or inconsiderate? You know, we have to inventory that in that way. Whom had we hurt? Did we justifiably arouse jealousy or suspicion or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? And we got all this down on paper. Okay, it's a simple inventory, and it's also very powerful. It's very, very powerful. And once the more we learn to do it, the freer we are going to be. Okay, I want to go to page. Now that's all it talks about. Let me see. I want to read the word convince again. At the bottom of 70, in this book you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. You know, it's not saying that God did for us. It says that faith did it for us. It's the faith that we have that and what we're doing that has done for us what we could not do for ourselves. And then hope, we hope that, you know, that's the spiritual principle of the second step. We hope that you're convinced. Remember that we had to be convinced of the ABCs of the program. We had to be convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success. Kept talking about being convinced. Well, now they're asking us if they hope that we're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. See, now we're going to what... that God can do it, okay? But faith got us to this point. And then we have to trust and rely upon God to take us the rest of the way. If, you know, that little word, two letters, if, that is a condition word. And if we don't go beyond the condition, we're not going to get what we need. If you have already made a decision, remember, when we made a decision in that third step, let me get my definition of use this. But this is what I understand that a decision is. It's the ability to make up my mind and carry out my intentions. The ability to make up my mind and carry out my intentions. So if I have made up my mind and I want to carry out my intentions, And I have taken an inventory of my grosser handicaps, then I have made a good beginning. That being so, I have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about myself. I'm still trying to transfer stuff from this book to my newer book. And I've had it, I think, 3 years. But there was a lot. One of the things to digest something is to understand and absorb mentally and make it part of me. I need to digest these truths, these big chunks of truth about myself, because the truth is going to set me free. I read something that Sir Francis Bacon said. He was born in 1501 and he died in 1623. But he said that some books are to be tasted, others are to be swallowed, and some are to be chewed and digested. So this is what I have done to this book. This is what I have done to this book. I tasted it at first. I started swallowing the truths about it. And now I have chewed it. You can tell how I chewed this book up. I had it recovered twice. This is like the third cover. But it doesn't stay open and it's so marked up. And I love my big print because I can write in it more and it lays flat. But I have digested the information in this book. And as a result of digesting what's in this book, I have been able to digest the truth about myself. A handicap is something that puts a person at a disadvantage or a hindrance. You know, I don't want to be at a disadvantage in my life. I want to be free. I don't want to be handicapped. Okay, now let's turn to page 72, beginning with into action. And remember, there are 7 steps in this this chapter, because I'm supposed to be having a personality change, a character change, personality change, sufficient to bring about recovery. That's what the spiritual experience is about. And into action is... action is a process of doing something. Action. It's a set of actions in a special order. That's what these steps are, except for 10, 11, and 12. But the first 9 steps, it's a set of actions in order. Okay? It says that having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? Because we have been trying to get a new attitude. We have been trying to get a new relationship with our Creator. And we have been trying to discover the obstacles in our path. Remember, we are on a spiritual path. And how it works said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Okay, so I knew that I wanted to begin to thoroughly follow the path of recovery. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. You see, our inventory is rough. Okay, and we have put our finger on the weak items in our personal stories. Now, these are about to be cast out. The sponsor helps us smooth this out because it's rough and we don't really understand everything. But when we go talk to that other person that understands this process, they're going to help us smooth it out. Okay? But it tells us that this requires action on our part, which when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our defects. And this brings us to the 5th step. Notice they have the 5th step written here. Remember, the first 2 steps are not written in the book, but from the 3rd to the 12th, it's all written in italics. Okay? So, that's what the interaction is with the 5th step. So, I had already read the promises yesterday, and they're telling us, you know, is our work solid so far? Is our step work solid so far by this time? Or have we tried to skimp on the cement, put in the foundation? And remember that my foundation needs to be deep enough and strong enough to withhold life and withhold the stresses of life. Okay. Now in 76, only 1 paragraph talks about step 6, and it says, we didn't look at step 6, okay? And that's why the AA 12 and 12 at that time in my recovery was so beneficial to me, because the big book gave me precise precise instructions of how to do these steps. But the 12, AA 12 and 12, it deepened and broadened the work that I needed to do. And so step six in the AA 12 and 12 was so helpful to me. And you know what it said on the first line? It says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. And this doesn't mean man, woman. This means, I believe it means from the childish behavior to the adult behavior. Okay? Boys are youth, men are grown. Girls are youth, women are grown. Okay? They said that, he goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honestly to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. So for me, I'm entitled to be called a woman of worth, who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of my Creator. God created me, and I want to grow in His image and likeness. But there is only one paragraph in the big book, but there's powerful, powerful sentences that we need to pay attention to. It says that we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. What is willingness? The key. Willingness is the key that opens the door. Okay? There's a question here. It says, are we now ready to let God remove from us all things which we have admitted are objectionable? Another question. Can he now take them all, every one? I mean, look at the dash in between there. There's a lot that's going to go on in that dash. You know, I've heard somebody, when you look at tombstones, they have the date you were born in a dash and the day you died. What all happened in that dash? You know, and that's the same thing here. You know, that dash. Now, this is the prayer, the six-step prayer. If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. And remember what it said in the third step in this AA 12 and 12, that self-will can slam it shut, but it can always be open once we pick up the key of willingness. But this willingness is absolutely necessary. It's absolutely necessary for us to move on. Okay? But to be willing is to be prepared in my mind, my attitude, and my manner. I have to be prepared in my mind. I have to be prepared in my attitude, and I have to be prepared in my manner of being entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, every one. Everyone. And this is a process. It's not an overnight matter. It must continue for our lifetime. Okay? Now, the next is the seventh step prayer. Also, only one paragraph. This is the precise directions that the big book gave us. The AA 12 and 12 broadened and deepened the meaning of that. And then we have our own O'Readers Anonymous 12 and 12 that helps us understand it more. People who cannot identify with alcohol, a lot of people are mad when they read about alcohol because they live with alcoholic people or whatever. Or they may be in denial that they're alcoholic themselves, you know, and then that triggers that inside of them. But I didn't have a problem with it. And I don't have a problem with it today. But that's why I think that people can identify with the Overeaters Anonymous 12 and 12 because it uses the word food and compulsive eating and overeating and stuff like that. So whatever works for you, what they say, whatever floats your boat, you know, whatever can get you well, whatever can get you free, whatever can get you to build that spiritual arch through which you can walk through freedom and not have to eat compulsively. That's the bottom line. That's our primary purpose, is to abstain from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message to other compulsive overeaters. I'm just sharing my experience, my strength and hope after almost 32 years of recovery. And as I said, when I first came into OA, OA was only 7 months old in my town of Houma. We didn't know what we were doing, but we kept trying, and kept being willing. We didn't just try, we were willing. We were willing to try to learn what this was all about. But this is the prayer, the seven-step prayer. I would like for us all to say it together. It says, let's get in a prayerful mind. My Creator, I am now willing that you shed all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Have you ever heard, saw the word amen in the book? No. Amen is not after step three. That means so be it. Amen is only after the seventh step in the book. That means that from step three until now, that's the whole prayer. That is the whole prayer. All that work. Okay? Then it says, we have then completed step seven. Italicized. Okay? Would anybody like to share? If not, we'll take a little break. Okay, let's regroup, because there's a lot of territory to cover, but I know I'm going to only be able to color another hour or so. Let's regroup with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. For the tape, this is we're still on Sunday morning. It's 10:10. It's March the 6th. It's 2010. We've had a great retreat here in Looters, Texas. I got it? I didn't even have to say Looters. They say if you keep repeating something over and over, you're going to finally learn it. Well, so anyway, it's been a real pleasure for me to be here and to share with y'all enthusiasm and the joy. You know, I want to talk a little bit about joy. I have it on my card, so we're not going to go in the book, but the big book on page 15, it says, the joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulties. On page 128 in the big book, it says, joy is our release. Joy is our release. And on 164, it talks about that joy of helping others. The joy of helping others. Joy means a feeling of satisfaction and happiness coming from experiencing something good. And that's why I feel so much joy about this weekend, because I think that we've experienced something good here this weekend. Joy implies intense delight and happiness, often in expressing itself in rejoicing. And you know, we can rejoice today and tomorrow and the hereafter, because we have found this solution for this devastating disease that we suffer from. Joy is contrast to happiness. Contrast to happiness stands joy. Joy runs deeper and stronger. Joy is quiet, confident assurance of God's love and work in our lives. That he will be there no matter what. No matter what, he'll be there. Happiness depends on happenings, but joy depends on my relationship with God. In another book that I read a lot, it says that whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Because true peace, true joy, is not found in positive thinking, in absence of conflict, are in good feelings. It comes from knowing God is in control. And that's what this book teaches us. It teaches us that, you know, God is in control. I want to go back in the big book to page 62. At the bottom of the page, where it says that this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided, remember about decisions. Now, that's the ability to make up my mind and to carry out my intentions. Okay. We decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. In other words, the director runs the show, and the actor listens for direction. Because it tells us in the book that we're like an actor trying to run the whole show. Okay? So we have to give up our acting career and listen to the director. That's what he's telling us here. God was going to be our director. A director runs the show and the actor listens for directions. Okay? The book says he is the principal and we are his agents. An agent represents who the principal or the employer would have them be. I am an agent of God. I'm the agent of God. It goes on to say that he is the father and we are his children. The father-child relationship. A child trusts their father can provide what they're incapable of doing on their own. You know, that's the way a child depends on a parent. Just because I didn't have the experience of being able to depend on my earthly father, it doesn't mean that I haven't learned to depend on my heavenly father. And that's what this program has taught me and given me. And, you know, for that, I'm grateful. So, you know, on this page it says, am I ready to make the decision that hereafter I will trust that God will provide what I need? I need to learn to trust and rely upon God. And I do, I have. And at times when I falter, then I have to address that and dig deep inside of myself about, you know, what's the problem here? What's wrong with you, Janice? You know, what I know that God will continue to give me opportunities to tell others about OA. He will. And with that opportunity, he is going to provide me the ability, the courage, and the power to do that. And I know that because I know that I'm God's workmanship. I know that I'm a work of art and his masterpiece because I'm his child. And you know, I'm grateful for that because the path is spiritual. And the path begins by putting the food down. Got to put the food down and find a way to live with the food down. And if I have, you know, ideas of picking up the food again, then I need to look into that. I need to see that's not the way of life I want to live. It's not a spiritual way of life. I'm freed from that hopeless state of mind and body, and I want to continue to live in that peace, you know, in that peace that passes all understanding. So on page 87 and 88 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Because these three concepts of God, that God is going to be the director, he's going to be the principal, and he's going to be our father, these three aspects of the relationship with God in the third step now become a way of life. That becomes a way of life. That the father, that I will trust God to provide what I need, that God will direct my life, and that I will represent what God would have me be. See, it brings all of that together by the time we get to 87 and 80. Let's see here. I'm too far. It's upon awakening, and at night. Okay? I'm going to go to 86 right now. When we retire at night. You know, a lot of people question, why did they put when we retire at night first? Why didn't they put in awakening? It doesn't matter. You know, if you do it at morning, you do it at night, it doesn't matter. They say that we need to quit nitpicking, and we need to quit wondering what came first, the chicken or the egg. I mean, you know, we're never going to be able to figure that out. But it tells me that when I retire at night, that I need to constructively review our day. That word is not destructive. It's constructive, that we need to constructively review our day. And there are four areas of our life that we need to look at. The resentment, the selfish, the dishonest, or the afraid. You know, we need to keep looking at that with our 11th step. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. So, you know, whatever situation comes along in my life is just like knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. When I call my sponsor, she'll say, Janice, the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. You know, my sponsor lives in, let me see where she lives now. She's moved. In Pennsylvania, she lives. State College, Pennsylvania is where she's living. She's originally from Jacksonville, Florida, and she's been in the program 9 months less than I have. And she's been sponsoring me for over 5 years. And she is from Jacksonville, but they moved to Arizona. And I had the wonderful opportunity to visit her twice while she lived in Arizona. She lived there a little over a year. But my husband and I took a vacation there about a year and a half ago, and we got to go to the Grand Canyon. And so, you know, that was a wonderful, wonderful experience. But now she's living in State College, Pennsylvania. I never heard of that place. And remember when that big snowstorm came through there? State College. Wow! You know, I never heard of State College in my life. And all of a sudden, it's got world news, you know, that big snowstorm that came through there. But anyway... she constantly reminds me about that. But, you know, these are questions that we need to ask ourselves at night when we constructively review our day. You know, do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? You know, that's like that dishonest, that lie of omission. You know, that could fall into that. Were we kind and loving toward all? I know sometimes I'm not kind and loving to my husband, you know, and I have to correct that. And it really aggravates me when I talk to my sponsor about that. Do you owe him an amend? No. Yes. You know, it says, what could we have done better? Well, I could have bit my lip. Were better. I could have not said what I really wanted to say. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Yeah, you know, because I want my way. I want him to do what I want him to do. You know, but that's not loving and kind, and I know it. Or were we thinking about what we could do for others? The other day, right after we left church, he just got fired up about something. I mean, twice before we even got to the restaurant where we were going to go eat, you know? I thought, damn. You know? What's wrong with him? You know? And so I was like wanting to pout, you know, but the grouch, you know, and the brainstorm, that's not for me. But anyway, when we got out of the car, I thought, I am not holding his hand. Because, you know, we usually walk holding hands. I said, I'm not holding his hand. But I did. I grabbed his hand. And, you know, we walked into there. Because he flares up and he's over it. Not me. Not me. But that was loving and kind. That's what I could do. You know, I felt he was wrong. But that's not my problem when he's wrong. You know, I have to... do better. I have to do better in the situation. Because, I mean, I could have rent my whole Sunday afternoon, you know? And it's not worth it. It's not worth it to ruin that. Or were we thinking about what we could do for others or what we could pack into the stream of life? You know, that's where I want to be. I want to be in that stream of life. I don't want, the big book talks about that stream of misery on page 163. I don't want to be in that stream of misery anymore. I want to be into that stream of life. But then it goes on to say that we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse. Remorse, you know, that when we resent ourselves, we're in remorse, okay? Or morbid reflection. I can drift into morbid reflection really, really quick. And I know that. I recognize it when that happens. For that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. That's at night. And then this is on awakening. And listen, if you haven't done your fourth step or you're not that far into the program, you do this. Do this upon awakening every morning. And work on your 10th step if you haven't completed your fourth step. It's going to keep you from having to make more amends. Huh?
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's going to keep you from having to do more harm and making more amends. But, I mean, you know, start doing this. Even if you're new in the program or you don't understand the program, start doing this. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, not our feelings. Especially asking that it be divorced from. Look at the first thing we have to look at in the morning. What? Self-pity. Self-pity. That must mean that self-pity is going to be with us a long time. Because it's the first thing that they're asking us to look at in the morning. To ask God to divorce us from that. And this time the word divorce is wonderful. I never liked the word divorce, but in this sense, I take it and accept it. We need to ask to be divorced from dishonest. Those direct lies we tell, those lies of omission that we live with, those lies that we tell ourselves. We need to quit telling ourselves lies about ourselves that's not true. Because the direct lies we tell ourselves cause us to drift into remorse. And here in the 11th step, they're asking us to be careful not to drift into that worry, that remorse, or that morbid reflection. We need to be careful. It says careful. Be careful. Okay, then the self-seeking motives. Remember, self-seeking is the things we do to try to get our own way. The manipulation that we do. Okay, so this book is teaching me that we fall into those errors often. If we have to start looking at them every day, every morning, you know. It says that under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking, not our feelings, our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In other words, when my thinking is clear of self-pity, when my thinking is clear of dishonest or self-seeking motives, okay? Then there's more instructions about the day. This is something that needs to go on all day because I think all day. Okay? It says, in thinking about our day, okay, the next paragraph, we may face indecisions. Okay? Remember what decision means? That ability to make up our mind and carry out our intentions. Okay? If I'm indecisive about in my mind what I want to do and need to do, then I need to face that and make decisions about my day. It says that we may not be able to determine which course to take. So here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. I need to let God help me decide. It says that we relax, we take it easy, we don't struggle. And we're often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Okay, remember that we have a physical, mental, and spiritual illness. Well, our mind, if we are inspired, gradually our mind is going to heal. Our mind is going to heal, and we are going to be able to think clearly. One of the hardest things about going on a trip, especially for a week or even 3 days, is still hard, is that I have a hard time making a decision about the clothes I'm going to wear. And I tell people, I don't know how cute I want to be a week from today, you know. And so I'm sponsoring this girl, and she says, Janice, are you packed yet? And I said, well, I still haven't decided how cute I want to be, you know. And I said, that's the hardest part. And so when I'm telling her, I said, well, I'm almost know how cute I want to be, you know. And she knows that means I'm almost packed or something. So it's a real, she's going to be listening to these tapes. So that's one of the reasons why I'm saying it. She lives in Shreveport, Louisiana, and she wants to buy the tape. She's so disappointed because she wanted to hear me this weekend. And because she did that when I did the Florida State Convention in last February year. And she listened by phone the whole time I spoke. And she wanted to do that this time, but the cell phone didn't work in here. She said that just sucked. Okay, Simba, that's for you, girlfriend. Okay, so she's just really, really a blessing to sponsor. Okay, it goes on to tell us that, you know, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact. Remember, in step two is when we made that first conscious relation with God. Well, all through the steps, more and more, we're going to be getting this conscious contact. But, you know, it tells us that it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. You know, and we might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. But nevertheless, we find that our thinking, will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration because we come to rely upon that. You know, and then it talks about our period of meditation, that we need to pray that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems, and that we ask especially, this is all prayer, we ask especially for freedom from self-will, and we are careful to make no requests for ourselves only, but we can ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. But we are careful never to pray for our own selfish end. We Because many of us have wasted a lot of time doing this, and it doesn't work, and we can see why this doesn't work. And then it tells us that, that we can go to the church of our choice or whatever, and that we need to be quick to see that religious people are right, and we can make use of what they offer. We can make use of what the church or whatever we believe in can offer. And then it goes on to tell us that as we go through the day, we need to pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action, our will in our life, our thinking in our life, action. Our life is our actions. And I need to know that I can trust God will provide what I need. I need to continue to go on through life knowing that God's going to provide what I need. And when I get afraid of that, then I have to deal with the fear about it. And it tells me that I have to constantly remind myself that I am no longer running the show, no longer, that God is the director. This is where this brings this from this third step decision, that God is the director, that God will direct my life. And humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. God is the principal. I'm the actor. The actor's got to follow the director. I will represent what God would have me be, not what he would have me do, what he would have me be. And then I would say, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. Efficient means without waste of time or energy. I need to learn how to conserve my energy. I need to be able to have the strongest energy that I can have. I mean, I gotta have energy to ride my bike 4 miles a day. I have to have energy to keep up with this 77-year-old man I'm married to. I need to be able to enjoy my grandkids. I have a little 5-year-old granddaughter. She thinks I'm her playmate. I go visit them and she wants me to go play with her. I want to visit with my son, and she wants me to go play with her. But, she's not going to always want me to play with her. I know that because I have 5 other grandkids, So I want to spend as much time with her as she can. And she has this little dog, a little chihuahua. I can't stand dogs. I like this little dog. Her name is Biscuit. Okay, and that little dog is crazy about me. And she comes in, yip, 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 want me to pick her up. And she gets all right up on me and everything, and I just stroke her and everything. And my son says, yeah, Ghani's giving her a rub down, so that's why she likes Ghani so much, But I'm having a lot of fun with that little dog and Lily. Because that little dog runs 90 miles an hour and Lily's right behind him with that blonde hair flying, and running after that little dog. But it's just such a pleasure. Another thing that's a pleasure about that is for Hurricane Gustav, they told us we needed to evacuate because Oklahoma was going to be underwater. That's only the second time that we've been living down there in 50-something years that we ever evacuated. Well, we didn't go far. We went to, we were getting away from the water possible. So we went to my brother's house in Gonzales where I was raised. And they had 8 little chihuahua puppies, 8 days old. And my youngest son and his family, the 3 children were with them. And that Sean, who is 12 now, but he was 10 or 11 at that time, he would not shut up about wanting that one of those dogs. And my brother was selling them for $125. And Shay, my son, kept saying, no, because y'all never going to tend to them. Y'all not going to tend to them. He was right. Y'all not going to tend to them. Y'all not going to take care of it. But finally, my sister-in-law told Loretta, if we would give y'all a dog, would y'all take it, And Loretta begged Shad to take it, and they're not going to take care of it. You don't like a dog in the house, they're not going to take care of it. And so we came home with that dog.
No, I'm wrong. My brother came bring it after the dog was 6 weeks old. I swear to you. But they said yes to the dog. Well, they were going to name it Sunshine, or they were going to name it Blondie, because it's a little blonde chihuahua. Well, in the meantime, Lily is going to preschool, and she was reading a book. The little dog, just a, you know the little book? The little blonde dog in there, the dog's name was Biscuit, you know. So then they decided to name it Biscuit. Well, when my brother came bring it, he came to our house first. He had it in a Splendor box. It was so cute. I thought she should have been named Splendor. But it wasn't my dog, so I don't want it to be my dog. But anyway, they named her Biscuit, and I just love that little name for her. But she's not a house dog. She has to stay on the patio. And then my son got sick and tired of cleaning up the poop on the patio, and so he got one of those stakes that you put on in the ground where the dog can, you know, run around during the daytime, and they kennel her at night, you know. But the other night I was over at Lily's, and she was in the, they have a studio room in the back of their house, but she was at the door. She says, "Connie, Biscuit wants to see you." She wanted me to go get Biscuit out of the kennel and play, so we could play with Biscuit together and all, you know. But you know, like I say, I know that, you know, those things are not going to happen. That my granddaughter Danielle, she's 28 now, and for a time they lived right next door to us. When she was 11 months old, they moved there, and when she was 4 years old, her and her mama, her dad and her mama separated, and they divorced when she was 7, and my son lived with us for 3 years, and you can be absent when kids come back, too. And she used to come every other weekend, and what was hard about that was when I would go off on weekends, you know, like to a workshop or whatever, and she didn't want me to go, and I could still see her crying at that fence, "Connie, I don't want you to go, I want you to stay here," and I didn't listen to that. I didn't listen to that because I knew I needed to go and be with my OA. And the thing of it is, now I hardly ever see her. You know what I'm saying? All the time I invested in that, because she lives in New Orleans and she's a registered nurse, and she works 7 and 7, and she works at night. So she sleeps during the day, and on her days off, she goes home, you know. But we did all get together, I think it was the 12th of January. But, you know, I love her and I miss her, and I had a lot with her, and I healed a lot with her, because when I went through that psychic change right before I was 5 years in the program, she was 11 months old, and it was like I focused on her, that sweetness of her and that innocence of her, and she helped bring me back into the light of day and the light of night. I mean, the light of the world, you know, and I'm grateful for her. She'll never know what she did for me. She'll never know how special that was for me. I tell it a lot. It's sometimes I forget to tell it, but I remember it. And it's those sweet things of my recovery that I need to remember. And Lily is, my sponsor tells me that Danielle was in the pain of my life. It was when I was trying to recover from all my pain. And then I felt pain. I had transference of pain for her because her mom and daddy were divorced. You know, it was a transference. But Lily, it's the time of my life for my joy. She's the joy of my life. But I can enjoy her because I don't have any pain of involved around it. And so I call these granddaughters my bookends. You know, they like bookend my life. And that's how I see the beauty of those two girls, you know. And I have these four boys in the middle. Jacob is 18, and that's my daughter's son. And she has a son, Austin, who is 15. And then I had Shane is 17, and Sean is 12. So I tell you, it was like having babies all the time, looked like, you know. 10 years, all I had was Danielle. And then all of a sudden, we started having all these boys. And then Sean was 7, and now we have Lily, you know. And so I'm really grateful for these grandkids. And I love to see my children raise their kids. And when when for our 50th anniversary, my youngest son, each one of my children told us something about ourselves. And one of the things that my youngest son said was he was glad that we were still alive to see them raise their children. You know, and so that's what I'm so grateful for. I want to share something that's real special to me. And I'll probably cry when I do it. I better get my handkerchief right now. My daughter wrote this to Jimmy and I for our 50th anniversary. And she had written her daddy a poem for Father's Day a couple of years before this. And she entitled it Dancing with My Daddy. You know, because Jimmy's a really good dancer and Tina's husband doesn't dance at all. And so when we go places and everything, he dances with her, and that's just one of her favorite times to be able to dance with her daddy. And you know, about that time they came out with a song, something about dancing with my daddy. Luther Vandross, was that his name? They came out with that song. I said, well, Tina could have wrote that. But anyway, Tina entitled this dedication to us, Forever Love. And I'm going to share it with you right now. It's one of my favorite stories. I can listen to it time and time again. The story that starts their journey and the way Forever Love began. I was wrong. It was March 6th. I thought it was March 4th. It was March 6th. Of 1954, when he and his best buddy, Todd Williams, walked through that door, his path would lead him into a place called the Moonlight Inn. It's there he saw her, his destiny, this beautiful girl with hair as black as sin. His heart skipped a beat. He could not turn his eyes away. He turned to his buddy and vowed, I'm going to marry that girl someday. He was a young man of 21. She was a teenager at 14. They had just met their soulmate. And in the eyes of their love, this difference of age was unseen. He would race his 53 Chevy through those backcountry roads. He could not wait to reach her as the smile on his face showed. She would wait with excitement on that porch with a swing. She could not wait to see the face that made her heart sing. On August the 12th of 1956, in St. Teresa's Church, before family and friends and his heavenly son, they vowed their love and spoke those words. That in the eyes of God bound them as one. It was this place called Homa that they started their new life. He was their provider. She was a 12th grade student and a wife. Summers, winters, falls, and then spring, their life would be blessed with a wondrous thing. They would know the joy of becoming a father and a mother. They had a son, and as the seasons passed, he would become a brother. They had their little girl. I came on a cold November day. Little did they know that I would not be the last one on the way. For after a time, another would come to join my brother and me. He entered the world on the 1st of May, and that would complete our family. Through the years, they guided us with love and then set us free. They sent us into the world to be the best that we could be. Little angels, one by one, is how the third generation did start. Each grandchild has a uniqueness that touches their Ghani and Pop's heart. Four handsome boys and two beautiful girls will continue on with their bloodline. Their eyes will follow them with love
and their prayers will ask that they be just fine. Their love leads them to the celebration of this special day. And on this beautiful occasion, I have this to say. It's one of my favorite stories. I can listen to it time and time again. The story that starts their journey and the way forever love began, not the end. That was a beautiful gift that our daughter gave us. But what was so beautiful is that she knows our life. She knows our life. And one of the reasons a lot of this was documented in a book, in some writings that my husband put together for his grandkids and everything. But I remember when I was Region 8 trustee, my daughter was told me that, "Mama," she says, "I'm getting ready to get pregnant for my second child, Austin." She said, "I'm getting ready to get pregnant again." And I said, "Oh my God, Teen, if you get pregnant, that means it's going to happen right around conference." And she said, "Well, Mama, you want me to wait?" I said, "Oh no, I can't play God like that." You know, lo and behold, she got pregnant probably the first time she tried. You know, she's like me, very fertile. So anyway, she got pregnant. Austin was due on the 15th or 16th of May. Jacob was born on July 4th, due on July 4th, born on July 4th, you know, so we know what we're doing every July 4th. And the closer it got, she didn't have the baby on the 14th, on the 15th or whatever. Mother's Day was that Sunday, and she came over, and I told Latina, I said, "I am so upset, you know, that I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do." And she says, "Mama," she said, "I might not have the baby for another week. Who knows?" She said, "I want you to go on and go to conference." She said, "Because what we have, we wouldn't have if it wasn't for you being an OA. And I want you to go to conference." Well, I went with a heavy, heavy heart. I went with a heavy, and I still have some remorse about it, you know. But I felt like at that time it was the thing for me to do. Well, we had a horrible trip. Jeannie, that was my sponsor, the one that died with the leg amputated and everything, she was a rep, a delegate for my COLA intergroup, and she and her went together. I mean, we were stranded in Dallas. I mean, it was horrible. The trip was horrible trying to get home, get to L.A. It was when it was in Los Angeles. Well, anyway, about 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, the phone rings, and I screamed because I knew that Tina had that baby. And she did. She had it. And she told me, she said, "Mama," she said, "Austin loves Dad. He was only a half an hour old, and I heard him cooing on the phone." And she said, "Austin was crying, and Daddy took him, and he shut up. He stopped crying. He stopped crying." And, you know, to me, that's a beauty. Because if I'd have been there, you know who would have took that baby? I'd have took him. But Jimmy had that pleasure, and Tina had that pleasure of knowing her daddy was there, and he took her baby, you know. Because Tina adores her daddy, and she adores him. And for a lot of times when she was growing up, I used to feel a pain inside. But the pain I felt was I didn't have that. And watching them have it was painful at times, you know. But today I'm healed of that, and I can, you know,
appreciate the beauty that of what they had. I didn't have it, but she has it, and I'm grateful for her. And to watch Lily with her daddy, you know, she wasn't supposed to be born. I mean, because their first two kids were fertility drug kids, okay? And they decided no more fertility drugs and all of this. And guess what? No fertility drugs, Lily. You know, Lily. And Chad had to start taking high blood pressure medicine. Because he had planned a retirement, an early retirement. He's still only 46, but he had his life planned, you know. And so when they found out that they were pregnant with Lily, he said, there goes my retirement. That shoots my retirement. And so anyway, he adores her. She adores him. And she gets up in his face and she pulls on his ears all the time. She's always pulling on his ears. And so he's a deer hunter like his daddy, and he goes off for, you know, a week or 3 or 4 days or whatever, and she misses him a lot. Well, we were over there one day when he had just come and came back from a hunting trip, and she crawled up in his lap and she started pulling on his ears, and she said, "I missed your ears." Isn't that adorable? "I missed your ears." You know, so it's all what gives comfort, you know, all what gives comfort. But I'm just really, really grateful for my family. I'm grateful that I have been able to heal from my past and my life. And my life was just the way it was. It, you know, it's just the way it was. And when I bring it up, it's to help others. It's not that I still live in all that pain and all that misery. You know, I don't. Sometimes it comes back on me, but not very often, and I'm grateful for that. So doesn't that summarize just about the things I've been telling y'all about me? Yeah. Okay. I have a couple of things I want to share here. I'm reading from the fourth edition of page 450 and 451. I'm going to be down at the bottom of the page where it says, "Then I realized that I had to separate my sobriety from everything else that was going on in my life. No matter what happened or didn't happen, I couldn't drink. In fact, none of these things that I was going through had anything to do with my sobriety. The tides of life flow endlessly, for better or worse, both good and bad. And I allow, is it in the fourth edition, is it in the third edition, this morning?
I don't know.
He lived only to drink. I'm in the fourth edition.
And what was the page?
450. And 450. I'm in the fourth edition. It might not be in the third edition. He lived only to drink. Is it? Okay. The tides of life flow endlessly for better or worse, both good and bad, and I cannot allow my sobriety to become dependent on these ups and downs of living. Sobriety must live a life of its own. Abstinence must live a life of its own. I'm going to change it. I don't overeat. In fact, none of these things that I was going through had anything to do with my abstinence. The tides of life flow endlessly for better or worse, both good and bad. I cannot allow my abstinence to become dependent on these ups and downs of living. Abstinence must live a life of its own. Most important, I came to believe that I cannot do this alone. From childhood, despite the love I experienced, I had never let people, even those closest to me, inside my life. All my life, I had lived the deepest of lies, not sharing with anyone my true thoughts and feelings. I thought I had a direct line to God, and I built a wall of distrust around me. In AA, I faced the pervasive weight of the 12 steps and gradually realized that I can separate and protect my sobriety from outside hazards only in as much as I rely on the sober experience of others, AA members, and share their journey through the steps of recovery." Change that. In OA, I faced the pervasive weed of the 12 steps and gradually realized that I can separate and protect my abstinence from outside hazards only in as much as I rely on the abstinence experiences of others.
other AA members and share their journey through the steps of recovery. The reward of sobriety are bountiful and progressive as the disease they counteract. I think that's a powerful sentence. The rewards of abstinence are bountiful and as progressive as the disease that they counteract. The steps counteract the disease. Certainly among these rewards for me are release from the prison of uniqueness. The realization and participation in the AA way of life is a blessing and a privilege beyond estimate. A blessing to live a life free from the pain and degradation of drinking and filled with the joy of useful sober living, and a privilege to grow in sobriety one day at a time and bring the message of hope as it was brought to me. I will change the words. The rewards of abstinence are bountiful and as progressive as the disease that they counteract. Certainly among these rewards for me are release from the prison of uniqueness. The realization that participation in the OA way of life is a blessing and a privilege beyond estimate. A blessing to live a life free from the pain and degradation of overeating and filled with the joy of useful abstinent living, and a privilege to grow in abstinence one day at a time and bring the message of hope as it was brought to me. I just love these stories. They're so powerful. I want to share another one on page, I don't think this story is in the third edition. This is the fourth edition, 475, The Twice Gifted. She wrote that, my physical being has certainly undergone a transformation, but the major transformation has been spiritual. The hopelessness has been replaced by abundant hope and sincere faith. The people of Alcoholics Anonymous have provided a haven where, if I remain aware and keep my mind quiet enough, my higher power leads me to amazing realizations. I find joy in my daily life, in being of service, in simply being. I have found rooms full of wonderful people, and for me, each and every one of the Big Book promises have come true. Remember that this is a weekend of principles and promises, okay? The things that I have learned from my own experience from the Big Book and from my friends in AA, patience, acceptance, honesty, humility, and true faith in a power greater than myself are the tools I use today to live my life, this precious life. Today my life is filled with miracles, big and small, not one of which would ever have come to pass had I not found the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I will change the words. My physical being has certainly undergone a transformation, but the major transformation has been spiritual. The hopelessness has been replaced by abundant joy and sincere faith. The people of Overeaters Anonymous have provided a haven where if I remain aware and keep my mind quiet enough, my higher power leads me to amazing realizations. I find joy in my daily life and being of service and simply being. I have found rooms full of wonderful people, and for me, each and every one of the Big Book promises have come true. The things that I have learned from my experience, from the Big Book, and from my friends in OA, patience, acceptance, honesty, humility, and true faith in a power greater than myself are the tools I use today to live my life, this precious life. Today my life is filled with miracles, big and small, not one of which would ever have come to pass had I not found the door of Overeaters Anonymous. I surely would not be in Luders, Texas today. I would not be looking at all y'all beautiful faces. This is going to be a treasure for me to remember, because, you know, I remember the people I meet in the places that I go, and I'm grateful for that. And so this is just going to be one more place in my treasure chest of memories. I want y'all to remember me now, and I'm going to remember you.